Welcome to the Data Pulse. I'm your host, Anika. In this podcast, I dive into the growing role that data science plays in the latest biomedical innovations. Join me as I go behind the scenes and check the pulse with domain experts and rising stars who are leading advances in data-driven human health. I'm here today with Dr. Gaurav Singhal, who is Chief Data Officer of Foundation Medicine, where he is responsible for developing enterprise-wide data strategy and overseeing the development of a portfolio of data products, including clinical care and analytics software tools, molecular trial recruitment services, and real-world data solutions. He is also a practicing physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital and a faculty member at Harvard Medical School, where he directs a course on health technology and innovation. Prior to his role at Foundation Medicine, he received his BS summa cum laude in computer science with a focus on AI and machine learning from Columbia University, earned an MD with honors from the Harvard-MIT Division of Health Sciences and Technology, and completed residency training in internal medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. Hi, Gaurav. It's great to have you talk about precision medicine today. Let's dive right in. Your training through your scientifically oriented MD uniquely combines medicine and machine learning. How did you end up at this intersection?
Yeah, great question. And thanks, first of all, for having me here. It's a real honor. I grew up the kid of two doctors, so I saw medicine my whole childhood and got an up-close look at the impact that my parents were able to have in the patients they cared for. My dad's a cardiologist, my mom's a pediatrician, so I saw really both ends of that spectrum. With that said, I was always more fascinated with computers. My dad got me a computer when I was four. I had one close friend growing up, and the two of us spent most of our childhood learning how to program and just sort of teaching ourselves a bunch of stuff around computers and computer science, and really was blown away by the notion that you could create something from nothing, and that power resided sort of in your own hands. So I carried that with me through undergrad, and in undergrad I studied computer engineering. I wanted to build robotics, and as I got interested in robotics, I got more and more interested in the computer science side and the data science side and machine vision and artificial intelligence, and was really fascinated by that thought that that's what I would work on. But as I went through undergrad, what became clear to me was that while I was intellectually really fascinated by that side of computer science and robotics, I wanted to work on a problem that really inspired me. And I thought back to my childhood and the problems that my parents were facing and the problems that their patients were facing. Those were the places I felt like I could really make an impact on the world. So that's sort of how I ended up ultimately at that intersection. And I explored different dimensions of that, again, research, entrepreneurial, academic, and otherwise. And ultimately really was drawn toward the opportunity to build things for people on the industry side. And that's where I've been for the last decade.
Right. So you mentioned you were in both academia and in industry. And what prompted you to specifically go into genomics for precision medicine?
Yeah, that's a funny story. I did my medical training at Mass General Hospital in internal medicine and briefly entertained doing fellowship or subspecialty training. And I always thought that would be in cardiology because, you know, I'm an engineer at heart, and I really understood the part of medicine that was mechanical or you could derive from first principles, as opposed to the molecular biology or more sort of chemical side of medicine. And as you look at oncology and that whole world where genomics and precision medicine has really taken hold, that's really a molecular biology sort of domain. And for that reason, I never really liked oncology. I was, again, drawn to the more sort of mechanical disciplines of medicine. But as I was going through my training, I appreciated a couple of things. Number one, as I thought about where data science could have the greatest role and computer science could have the greatest role in medicine, it felt like genomics and precision medicine was that place, and the place that was being applied was oncology. And even more importantly, the company where that was happening and that was really leading the charge on that was Foundation Medicine.
It's really neat that you're able to take your what maybe were once disparate interests in medicine and the more computational side of things and actually meld them together into a field that, as you mentioned, was just beginning to be poised to really make an impact and maybe even change the paradigm of medicine. I would love to learn a little bit about what it was like as a chief data officer. What does the title of chief data officer mean?
So the role of chief data officer is a relatively new role in the industry. And I will say it means different things to different people and to different companies. Classically, when you think about the role of a chief data officer, I think about it in sort of one of two camps. One is the role of sort of chief data architect and infrastructure leader, which includes data governance and building the data platform and master data management and, you know, all of the nuts and bolts of actually creating a data asset that ultimately your organization and or the sort of universe that your organization serves can make use of. The other type of chief data officer is sort of the chief data science officer, right? Where that person is responsible for extracting value from the data through data science and leading the data science parts of the organization. I would say at Foundation Medicine, it was sort of a unique role that evolved out of the needs of the organization, which included a number of other disciplines as well, like product management and even design and experience design and user experience design. And the reason for that was, as you think about Foundation Medicine, starting as really at its core a diagnostic company, but with an information and insights company as its trajectory, there was a need for a data platform that certainly was an asset and a data set and had all of those components, certainly had a data science component as well, but certainly as important or even more important was a platform that would create value from that data and create that value in the form of products and services and other offerings. So, you know, the role I've had the pleasure of serving at Foundation Medicine has been that of chief data officer as product leader, as well as data science design and data platform.
I think it's fascinating that as with anything that's new and sort of evolving, if you're able to be one of the first players in that space, then you have great opportunity to help with the evolution. So let's switch over and talk a little bit about what precision medicine is. How would you explain precision medicine as a concept and why the field is powerful?
Yeah. So, you know, precision medicine is an interesting phrase that's obviously taken a lot of energy and a lot of interest over the last several years. I would say most doctors would say that they've practiced precision medicine from the beginning of, you know, their careers, no matter what era they're talking about. You know, some people describe precision medicine classically as right drug, right patient, right time. And really, it's the notion that we should really understand the specifics of an individual patient and the specifics of their individual disease and recognize that not all forms of that disease are the same, even if they look like they're the same from the outside. And the more we know about that disease process, the better we can target therapies and tailor them for that individual patient. Oftentimes, when people talk about precision medicine, colloquially, they're talking about genomics. And I think that's largely because genomics, at least in oncology, has given us a very clear articulation of that general concept. And by that, I mean, in oncology, you know, there's a broad recognition that cancer is largely a disease of the genome, right? It's changes in the genome to a large extent that allow and enable cancer to exist and grow and spread. And the more we understand those specific processes, the more likely we are to be able to target the specific mechanisms of an individual person's disease process. You know, as with all things in medicine and biology, right, the reality is far more complicated than maybe the initial soundbite. And certainly, you know, oncology saw and continues to see its share of successes where that precision medicine hypothesis is really clear as day, right? Gleevec is the classic example where, you know, there's a specific molecular alteration that when identified can be treated with this powerful drug. And certainly there are many others. But we've also learned over time that the field has gotten much more complicated.
I think part of a piece of the puzzle is that as the more we learn about biology, the more precise we get in our medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say also the more humble we get in our appreciation for its complexity.
Exactly. How would you say that the field at large, and perhaps using your time at Foundation Medicine, has capitalized on the convergence of advancements in data science and biomedicine to improve disease diagnosis and treatment? And what have the necessary advancements been?
You know, part of this equation, and this is something that comes up a lot in lots of discussions about data science, is people often think about data science as as new algorithms or shiny sort of machine learning tools. What I think anybody in the field will agree is that at the root of all of it is a really high quality data set. Getting that is 90% of the battle, getting the right data, getting it harmonized and cleaned and ready to be analyzed. And then, of course, there's a lot of work to be done and sophistication required on its analysis in many cases. But really, the data in some ways is the hardest part. If you think about oncology and the evolution of precision medicine in oncology, and I'll just share my experience on the genomic side, where I've spent obviously a lot of time in the last several years. One of the biggest gaps in our understanding was not knowing the molecular characterization of so many tumors. And it's only once we've started to characterize those tumors that we've started to discover some of these findings. So I'll give you a concrete example from Foundation Medicine, which is a story that I think is incredibly compelling, which is a story of a gene called MET and a specific class of mutations in exon 14. And this class of mutations was discovered by scientists at Foundation Medicine in concert with scientists across academia and at major sort of research institutions. And the finding was fundamentally a class of mutations that until sequencing was starting to become more commonplace, which was largely the work of Foundation Medicine and others, this was a class of mutations that we just didn't know about. And once we started sequencing at scale and had the data assets, then we started to be able to comb those data assets using, you know, science and data science and biological understanding to uncover this new class of mutations. And once we uncover this new class of mutations, a number of drug developers started going after it. And just recently, there was major data that came out that showed that a class of drugs targeting this mutation are actually quite effective. And so that story, which now spans several years, goes from creation of a data set to discovery within that data set to targeting that particular class of alterations with a, you know, drug development program, to now seeing the other side of it where patients have started to benefit from that treatment, which only sort of came to light because of the data science that emerged from the availability of the data asset.
Your example with MET speaks a little bit to how we can use data to make better predictions for patients' outcomes and eventually even develop therapies for their diseases. I know Foundation has been focused on matching patients to therapies, so the diagnoses that they received were actionable. If we wanted to extend that sort of paradigm or that way of thinking, in general, how can we use this high-quality data that you mentioned to enable better predictions and better recommendations? And then there's a lot of talk about trying to use observational data to actually make some of these conclusions about potentially the effects of drugs or disease prognosis. What questions would you say are amenable to different kinds of data?
Yeah, this is a great question and probably worthy of several podcasts in and of itself. And certainly many other very talented and smart folks have commented on it recently. First of all, you know, the gold standard in biomedicine for evidence generation is the randomized controlled trial. And there's very good reason for that. And that reason is that often we observe things and can't specifically differentiate causality from correlation. And I'm sure you've heard that many times in your training, in your career. And part of the reason for that is, despite our best efforts to look at observational data, we don't know what we don't know. And there may be factors that we're not thinking about that are actually causing the outcome that we observe. The beauty of randomization is that, done right, it should largely control for or subtract out all of these factors, whether we can see them or not, and know about them or not. And that's why it's such an important vehicle. Many people have called randomization one of the single greatest advancements and tools in biomedicine. And I think there's a lot of reason to agree with that statement. It is truly incredibly powerful. Now, then one can ask the question, well, then why real world data? And in full disclosure, I've spent the last several years of my life invested in this. So I'm a believer and I certainly am invested in it. There's lots of reasons why real world data, despite what I've just said about randomization, is still really important. So number one, you know, randomization is expensive. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of money. It requires patience. It just requires a lot of investment. Secondly, as fields become more complex, cancer being certainly no exception, in fact, maybe a great example, there are so many different combinations that one could try to compare, and it becomes quite complicated to figure out how you compare each and every combination of potential paths forward, right? That grows exponentially. And then third, there's a pragmatic aspect to how trials are run in which, you know, ultimately you need to consent patients and enroll them. And sometimes there's extra visits required or they have to travel. And it just ultimately practically is the case that not every type of patient can participate in a randomized controlled trial, at least the way we run them today. And so there are patient populations that inevitably fall outside of those for whom we have good data through randomized controlled trials and studies. So all of that is to say that there are questions that either have not been answered or would be very difficult to answer through randomized controlled data generation. And for those questions, right, we're stuck in a tough spot, right? I'll put on my clinician hat, right? I still see patients 4 weeks a year. And when we end up in that situation, you know, your options are not, do I use real world data or randomized controlled trial data? Your options are, do I try to learn from the observations that we do have, or do I base it on gut, right? Or mechanism or first principles, which have been notoriously inaccurate in predicting true, you know, empiric results in just the history of medicine. And so when we think about that space, right, which is a growing space of just gray zone, right, where we don't have good randomized data to support our decision making, you know, there I believe there could really be a role for real world data, but there's a million asterisks there, right? We need to figure out, you know, what type of methods are appropriate, what we can infer, what we can't infer, you know, what the limits are, and at the end of the day, we won't have black and white answers coming out of that, but you know, used correctly and used responsibly. Real world data can, from a sort of population level, can enhance our ability beyond what our individual sort of experience as a physician might otherwise, you know, lead us to conclude.
That makes a lot of sense. I think one of the paradigms of some of the machine learning techniques that exist is garbage in, garbage out. And so as you mentioned earlier, the baseline is high quality data, but then when it comes to increasing that data in both quantity and variability of the type of data, exercising some discernment with respect to what types of data are going to be informative versus adding noise, I think is crucial.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, I think data quality is certainly a big part of the equation, but there's also a question of, you know, what questions are reasonable to ask and answer from real world data. Which endpoints, right, can be interpreted in a manner that's more causal versus more subject to correlation. There's a lot of complexity that goes into that, which is, I think, the really exciting frontier of data science and biomedicine is, you know, it's not just about the algorithm. It's about how you ask the right questions and use the results in a responsible manner. Because at the end of the day, this is a situation in which the decisions could have life or death implications, right? That's not always the case in domains where data science and machine learning are applied. And so, you know, the bar is appropriately very, very high.
Right. And that brings me to another question I have for you, which is to get a little bit behind the inner workings of your mind. When you're faced with a new biomedical question, what is your typical approach to defining and then iterating on a data-driven solution?
Yeah, I'll give you an answer probably more from the product management school of thought, because I would say that's really how I've been wired to think, and probably reflects the maybe slightly unconventional nature of my role in my chief data officer role at Foundation Medicine. And by which I mean that, you know, one can be inspired by technology and by science and, you know, by what's possible, be it from the data or from new methods and algorithms or visualizations or other tools and capabilities. But often that's quite challenging in medicine, and especially if you're thinking about the application to the clinical realm, you know, that's a world where we've seen technology forward solutions have not always been successful. My approach is certainly partly technology, you know, forward and thinking about what's possible and what's new and what does the data allow us to do. But I would say it's much more heavily weighted toward being sort of use case or problem back. And by that, I mean, you know, my view on this is the traditional product management philosophy of understand your users, what are they trying to do, what's important to them, and then where are they running into trouble today, right? What are their pain points? What are their friction points? And once you really understand the problem that you're trying to solve for your end user, whether that's patient or doctor or health system or, you know, research scientist developing a new medicine, then you can start to figure out where data and data science and data solutions can help fill those gaps. And the reason I like this approach is you'll never be working on a problem that isn't important, right? And if you can crack that nut, you know you'll have an excited and willing user on the other side.
The audience of this podcast is individuals who are looking to build something that is of use and of value to the patients. For those individuals, what skills do you think are essential to join this field and to actually contribute in a meaningful way? And this would be both technical and softer skills.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll go back to maybe the thread I was just pulling, which is this idea that, you know, data science is often misconstrued as simply a technical discipline. But, you know, where I see data science being particularly impactful, both now and certainly in the future, is taking a lens towards solving problems. And it's that problem-solving mindset coupled with a technical ability that will make data science, you know, most impactful and a data scientist, you know, really unstoppable. And so if you extend that line of thinking around really understanding who ultimately the beneficiary is of the thing you're trying to do or build or create, and you work toward that goal as your endpoint, and you measure your success by, did I solve the problem for my user or not? You know, rather than what are the performance characteristics of my algorithm, right? Then I think the data scientist of today and of tomorrow will really continue to be seen as indispensable for the field in which they're contributing.
Definitely. So thinking about the data scientists of tomorrow, in your opinion, what does the future of genomically informed disease diagnosis look like with certain technologies that enable precision medicine, be sequencing, cloud computing, and a couple others, maturing and even becoming the new normal?
You know, I think certainly a lot of the technology will evolve, and that includes diagnostic technology will be more pervasive. There will be better characterization of disease. There will hopefully be more real-world data collection and data liquidity. And so from an asset standpoint, I think breadth and depth and quality should all increase. Where I think that will lead the field is a greater appreciation and a tackling of complexity. And I'll just give a couple examples of what I mean by that. You know, historically, medicine and precision medicine has been of sort of the mindset and has pursued this idea, you know, let's say genomics and cancer, the dream of identify the single mutation that's driving this person's cancer, and I've got the drug that stops that mutation, right? And there have been success stories there, and actually there continue to be success stories there, but I think there's also been appreciation that there's a ceiling for that. And, you know, some things are not that clear and black and white. Second, there are many continuous variables in oncology and also in other parts of medicine where medicine has historically, you know, created discrete cutoffs, right? It's either positive or negative because the score is above this threshold or below this threshold, right? And oftentimes that's done because that's the evidence generation paradigm too, right? To run a clinical trial, often you have to say the group is biomarker positive or biomarker negative, and then you create your sort of, you know, you assess your endpoints as in those two categories. So those are just two examples of where I think the historical simplification of precision medicine and of biomarkers, I think will change dramatically. And part of it will be driven by the deeper characterization of patient populations, the broader availability of outcomes data, the larger scale of data sets, and frankly, just having picked the low-hanging fruit where those simplifications, you know, are not overly reductionist, right? That they actually capture enough of what you're trying to solve for. So what all of that means is I think there will be a greater complexity in our, you know, approach to biomarkers, composite biomarkers, understanding the interplay between multiple factors that might ultimately impact an outcome. I think a greater appreciation for continuous variables and recognizing that there's more information within a continuous variable than just, you know, causing it positive or negative would convey. And then figuring out how one both optimizes those composite sort of biomarkers and then also studies them and generates the evidence for them. So that's a very technical, I guess, response to your question. But I would say, you know, as a general statement, I think the degree of complexity and sophistication around biomarker discovery and validation will happen in the next, you know, several years, if not the next decade.
That's definitely empowering for somebody who might have some exposure to one of the two fields, but is just now getting their feet wet and looking for ways to make an impact with data science. When you look back on your career, which has spanned both science and medicine, as we've talked about, what threads have you consistently pulled and which paradigms do you plan to carry forward with you?
You know, I've often been asked, you know, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? What do you want to be when you grow up? And I've never really had a good answer to that question. So I would say the common thread that has spanned my career is more or less following my nose and working on problems and domains that I found interesting, where I felt like I could learn and grow and would be excited by. And, you know, that, as I mentioned earlier, I would say my journey seems maybe coherent in retrospect, but I can assure you prospectively was a series of steps that, again, were mostly intuitive, right? Going from engineering to medicine, from academia to industry, from a cardiology-bound career into oncology and precision medicine and genomics. You know, those all felt like the right decisions at the time, but not with some master plan, I would say, in mind for down the road. You know, maybe I've been lucky that I feel like has served me quite well. I do think there's probably some intrinsic truth to that, though, that, you know, following your nose, following your heart to things that are interesting and impactful allows you to both adapt to the world as it evolves, allows you to make sure that you're working on something that inspires you, which probably means that you will be more dedicated to it and put your full heart and soul into it. And you know, I will also say that I feel like careers can be highly convergent, right? You can end up in the same spot through multiple different paths. So might as well pick the one that you're most excited about along the way.
Right. As one might say in data science, find the local optimum for the current phase that you're in and what calls to you the most and continue to follow that path.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy.
Fantastic. Well, it's been very insightful chatting with you today, Gaurav. Thank you again for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me and good luck.
Thanks for joining me on today's episode of The Data Pulse. If any of the terms used in today's conversation were foreign to you, feel free to check out the podcast glossary, where I've included definitions and links to resources that my guests have shared. Be sure to tune in next week to once again get a sneak peek into the pulse of data-driven biomedicine.